Welcome to the She Do That podcast. My name's Hannah Lau Walker, coordinator at She Do That, and I'll be hosting our discussion today. This episode will be a chat about the recently released 2023 salary report with a panel of guests from different areas of the animation industry. For a little background on the report, following the success from the publication of our first salary report in 2022 and the interest and discussion it generated around UK animation salaries, we became aware of the lack of available UK animation salary data. We made a commitment after this to carry out two further surveys to provide workers in the industry with more information about real-time salary rates and use those findings to support further analysis and discussion. This episode is all about the further discussion and exploration of the report. We think this is an important contribution as hopefully it will encourage more conversations and discussions about salaries across the industry. So today we'll be chatting with studio founders, a producer and some wonderful animators about the report. Now if you've not yet read the salary report in full, you can check that out on the She Do That website in our resources section. We'll be talking generally about the findings and then going through the discussion points and recommendations one by one. So it's not totally necessary to read it through beforehand, but I would recommend checking out those numbers. Great, let's get started with the episode. Thank you everyone for being here. Yeah, so it's been a year since our last discussion. And again, we're here to unpack the findings in the salary rate report. And although the respondents have increased to over 500 workers, we still need to interpret the findings with caution, given there's a large diversity in the roles. The main aim of the salary was to capture a snapshot of the salary data reported by current animation workers as a basis for further discussion and exploration. And that's what this episode is all about. So yeah, I'm excited to dig in. It'd be great to introduce yourselves, if that's right.
Hi everyone, my name's Danny. I'm a 2D animator in TV series primarily, and that is based in the UK.
Hello everybody, I am Melissa Belgill. I am a senior animation producer working mainly with 2D and CG animation. And I am based in Spain, but working with companies in London.
Hi everyone, I'm Alina Boppele. I'm a 3D lead animator on feature film currently, also based in London mostly.
Hi everyone, I'm Catherine, co-founder and creative director of Formplay, and we're a UK-based 2D studio.
Hello everyone, my name's Emma Windsor. I'm a director and co-founder at Back to Front Studios, which is a handcrafted media production studio specialising in stop motion, and we're based in Bristol.
Amazing. A year on from a 2022 salary report, I feel like quite a bit has changed. But yeah, does anyone have any general thoughts on the report itself?
I think generally for me, it just totally reflects the world at large. I can't say I was surprised, although dismayed at some of the findings. I don't know how everybody else felt.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. It was disappointing, some of the findings. Certainly the discrepancies between gender pay, because you kind of hope that we're smoothing that out, but it doesn't appear that we are.
Yeah, I was really surprised about that. I mean, I wasn't surprised sort of in the world, that makes sense. But I, you know, from my experience, that doesn't happen where I am and the rates that I give people or pay people. So I was quite surprised that it seems to also be in this industry.
My note on it was heartwarmingly awful, because it made me feel so much better that it was just not just me.
I was also surprised at some of the wages that were put in, and I actually wondered if some were typos, genuinely. Like, there's someone who put in 40 quid a day. And I was like, who is paying that? So I think some of the rates surprised me as well.
Yeah, we had that with, we were looking through all of it, like cross-checking that whether they were just outliers, and then you're like, oh no, wait, several people have put this, like,
wow.
And
oh
then
God,
that's just
sad.
Like, yeah, a bit tough.
I was hoping that was a typo as well.
For my part as well, I mean, I guess that's why I'm here this evening, that we felt the rates, I know it was a very small sample, but the rates weren't really reflective of what we expect in our industry. they were scarily low, and I don't think they are reflective. I think greater research needs to be done on that, really.
Yeah, I'm very much hoping for like double the amount next year.
Yeah, yeah.
I think because especially when you get into all the different roles, it's so hard to like, the like, everyone slims down and it comes so specific. I think we spoke last time about how specific it can get, that it's so tricky to get that amount.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's certainly, again, within stop motion, I mean, the model making tier, that really needs to break down into two, at least two areas, one being puppet making and the other being sort of general model making. Because obviously puppet making is a highly specialist skill set. And no, the rates for that would not be what was reported. So I think we just, if for stop motion, which I appreciate is a niche and it's difficult to get information, but yeah, it would be great to have further information. And if we can help with that, then we will next time round.
There wasn't much data for stop motion, was there?
No.
No, okay.
I think the other thing, I spoke to some of the producers that I'm working with at the moment, and we were all a little bit sad at how some production companies are perceived and the sort of lack of trust. And we were all quite disappointed that that is, you know, I don't know in what sector that came from, but we were all like, that makes us a bit sad that people don't trust what we're trying to do here, and, you know, and we're not being fair. So I think, yeah, as producers, we were all quite gutted to read that people think that's the experience.
Yeah, it's so hard because it's, there's the clear lack of trust between people working and production houses, which needs to be mended. I mean, I'd like not to say that it's every production house and every, but it's, yeah, hard to read so many comments about that and that lack of trust. And also I wonder whether it's there a lack of information, whether people are interpreting things in one way, and because of the high turnover of animation, it's like you feel sort of left behind or not informed about something. And it's sort of, that's where those kind of, that lack of trust kind of grows, if that makes sense. But yeah, we can talk about it. Was there any other general thoughts before we get into the points of discussion?
I think for me, it was not surprising, the report. Kind of like, oh, that's kind of the result that we expect. But I think it's good, as usual, to have some data to back it up, at least. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, from last time, we have way more people that took part in it,
yeah,
right?
It's like we had 170 something last time, and this time we have over 500. So
that's great.
More data, which is great. Yeah, people have been a lot more vocal this time in the comment section. So that's why we've added in the themes of comments, because it just, topics kept coming up that sort of felt like it would be worth talking about and sort of unpacking a bit. But yeah, shall we jump into points of discussion? So our first point is the overall pattern emerging shows that males are consistently being paid more than their female counterparts, especially in the more senior roles. But there are occasions where females achieve greater pay than their male counterparts. Yeah, does anyone have any thoughts on that?
Oh, I was quite happy that it's not by much, though. Like in the averages when it's coming out, that made me feel... Because I've got absolutely no experience of what anyone, like a male counterpart to me, would be paid. We don't generally get to discuss that, especially as being a remote animator. So even though I expect that there is the pay gap, I was pleasantly surprised that it was smaller than I ever thought it would be. It's like pounds per day. Like it's not, it didn't seem to be much. It's not double, is it?
I'm reading the where it was slightly above average, where there's more equal sort of pay. Was it the females in direct to client? Was that?
It is, yeah.
So I just think it's quite interesting if that's the case, how, you know, especially I think the over 30s, you know, and that sort of pay discrepancy, you know, again, just trying to build a picture of how people, you know, perhaps women are not staying in the industry, perhaps they're, or perhaps they are, but they're pursuing, you know, starting their own studio or starting more independent routes rather than being employed. And, you know, I just wonder how that kind of maps out. But I don't know, perhaps it wasn't direct to client.
No, I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I am surprised because I would never approach producing a project to think, well, I'll pay the lads this and I'll pay the ladies this. Like, it really surprised me that people are not confident in setting their rates, and that's what the rate is, as a senior or a mid or a junior. But like Danny says, it's close, so maybe it's like the difference between 10 quid a day, or, you know. But I was quite shocked that it's throughout the industry, and especially as well, obviously with day rates, there's lots of discrepancy, but for permanent roles, for full-time roles, why is that happening? Like, surely if someone's coming in to do a constant role, you'd expect them to be on like a banding system. Yeah, I was surprised.
I think as well, just to note that on the annual salaries, actually in film, it is nearly like 10K. The average for females is 46,000 and the average for males is 58,000, which is quite a big jump.
Yeah, I think I'm seeing that quite a lot because the last few years worked more permanently in bigger studios on annual salary for the last 3 years. And it's interesting how much timing, luck, and who interviews you, and then obviously all the biases that are there in all the people actually affect this. Because it does actually matter when you apply to the project. Is it at the beginning when there's still a lot of budget? Is it later when we're like, okay, we have enough seniors now. Now we need people who are cheap because we don't have budget. So we get people on a lower rate. Okay, we can't hire anyone anymore that's not in the UK or remote because they're more expensive. All these things come into play so much. So the actual process of how do you negotiate and who interviews you is actually quite somewhat important. Sometimes it's just luck. But I see it really depends when you join, who you talk to, what you ask for. It's not straightforward at all. Like, it doesn't feel like there's maybe bands internally. But then when it comes to like, oh, now we need to finish this film in 3 months and we need to hire loads more people, all of a sudden they might get lower salaries than people who would have been hired at the beginning of the project, even though they're going to do the same job. So this happens a lot, which feels very unfair, because when you then find out that you're earning less doing the same job as everyone, it's sometimes hard to understand. And from what I'm seeing, it's very often these circumstances of production never going as straightforward as you expect it to go. So yeah, I think the findings also that in senior roles, the discrepancies are bigger, makes a lot of sense to me. I feel like we've gotten to this point maybe a few years ago where we said, like in the UK, in the unis, we have like a 50-50 distribution of who goes into the industry, and you have your juniors. And I think there's a general insight now that, you know, you got to try at least and hire somewhat 50-50 and diverse, which happens to me. I'm wondering, once people are working, if then these biases of men are being hired on their potential, women are being hired on what they can already do or promoted in that case, if those things start come into play, and then these kind of chaotic scenarios of applying for a new job and it depends on what timing or the luck, and then someone again probably giving the woman maybe a lower salary, or I don't know. I feel like it makes sense to me that the higher up it goes, the less chances you have as a woman to get paid equally, and that maybe, you know, because I think there's also this vibe of women not staying in the industry as long and leaving the higher up they go. Because if you maybe stay in your role, eventually you can't pay, or it's not like you want to move up. And then if you don't get what you deserve, or you know everyone else is getting more, I guess it's like super frustrating and you look maybe for other ways.
I think it's a problem that's industry-wide, well, beyond the industry, really. I mean, the creative industry at large, I think, is, you know, I think there's a report recently, brilliant article, actually, by Design by Women. And it really details how a lot of women are, for various reasons, perhaps not being represented, not treated equally, whether it's pay or otherwise. So, yeah, I think, and it's just interesting that despite, you know, as you say, this very even, equal start, there's something that's happening, and I think it's multi-layered, multifaceted, that's obviously driving people to have this sort of inequality, which is obviously deeply unfair.
Yeah. It's interesting that, actually, because I think my understanding is the kind of classic narrative behind this is that a reason is, certainly for salaried positions, is that when women take time out for maternity and to bring up children for a few years, that's when we fall behind. And our male counterparts progress much faster and therefore have more opportunities, are getting to the higher salaries, and possibly it's more difficult for us to get back into the position we were in and start working back up the ladder again. So maybe that's got something to do with this, because experience is flagged on this report, isn't it, as one of the basis for higher salary. So possibly that's, we need more paternity.
For sure.
I mean, I guess that doesn't happen much anyway. Like, official maternity leave in our industry is pretty rare, I guess, anyways.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the information I have, this comes generally in industry broadly. Obviously, it's for salaried positions. It's for people working about the career ladder, not us who are freelancing or running our own businesses in whatever capacity.
No, I was just going to say that that's worldwide, right? It's not just in our industry. It's definitely true that women stop working and they maybe, I have no idea when childcare starts, but is it from 2 or something, and then the school, and you can't necessarily work a full-time job because you've got to go and pick the kids up and all of these things. So I think that there's definitely a sort of sexist approach to that, which affects hiring, but not just in our industry. In fact, I would hope that creative industries are more flexible. I would hope that, but you know, it's a bigger issue, isn't it? It's beyond this.
Yeah, it's beyond it. I don't think we can sort that today.
I don't think we can solve it.
But everything else, we probably all nail down. I think within the hour, probably. So
sure,
it's all good.
I think a small difference is, though, most of my friends who don't work in the industry, they have a permanent contract and they go on leave and they have their few months and they're still getting paid and then they come back. Like, at least that exists more out there. I think when people hear that I have like 6 months contracts or 1 year contracts, they get a heart attack, right? Because that's not the norm in most industries. So I think that puts another level. Nobody's expecting ever to get paid by their company or by anyone. Like, even the people who are an annual salary, who have fixed contracts, they end in a few months and then that's it. You're like, I don't know, the 2 people who have permanent contracts in this industry are maybe lucky, but
who are these 2 people?
It would be interesting to know, actually, sort of within that discrepancy, how many are parents and whether or not that has had anything, you know, that whether that personal experience has affected the salary climb or affected the discrepancy. Because like I say, I'm just, you know, I am obviously a little bit of an idealist and potentially very naive, but like, I just don't really understand why you would pay a guy more to do the same role at the same level. I just don't understand. I understand with the progression and with, you know, salaries and all that, but on a day rate, I don't understand.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
I think we have to be aware of the fact that that's subconscious, right? Biases are subconscious. This is not something, an active choice that people are making. It's people who've never asked themselves, do I think she's annoying because she's a woman? Like, no, people who don't ask themselves these questions do not know that they're giving women lower salaries than men.
Hmm.
That's the problem, I think, that this is not being questioned enough. And that then in a situation where it's like, oh, looking at her CV, I think she has less experience and this guy has worked on this thing, so maybe he gets £10 more per day or whatever. And this is not being questioned as in like, wait, if this was the other way around, am I just thinking that because, am I just looking for reasons why she's maybe less skilled? Like, these are biases that we've all grown up with that if we don't question them, we have them in us.
But when you're talking of that type, like when you're talking of that situation, do you have a man in your head doing the hiring, or is it a man or a woman doing the hiring would have that bias?
I don't think it matters as much because all women have grown up in a biased world. We're not all aware of that just because we are women. We can be as discriminative towards women as men can be if we've not done a bit of work, or maybe if not experienced it yet, or, you know. I do generally imagine a man because it's been most of the time like that, let's be honest. At the end of the day, I think that's something, that's an awareness that needs to be spread through any gender, any kind of...
I wonder where it happens. Like, I know some boss-ass producers, and I've seen some amazing budgets for brilliant TV shows that I've worked on. And every animator is a box on a spreadsheet that gets one rate, and they work it out on that, and that's how they get their pitch, and that's how they get greenlit. It's not happening at that moment. Like, some amazing producer's not deciding that we'll have five dudes and five girls and we'll pay the dudes this and the girls this. Like, it's happening in negotiation somewhere. And then who, someone knows, some, like, at some point in that, like, that process, someone says yes and someone says no to something. And what, why? Where's the struggle? Like, I love negotiating, but I am finding it very difficult, like, very recently, especially in the last year or so, obviously. So I can do my best, but, like, how, like, where is it happening? Someone knows. Someone knows.
I'm not sure. I actually maybe kind of bring up the article that I sent. It's an article by The Guardian about the fact that, because I think there was a long time the belief that women don't ask for enough money and that's why they're being paid less. And this survey kind of shows that women are asking for enough money and asking often enough, but they're just not as successful, which goes in line again with the unconscious bias that, you know, if a man asks for more money, they're like, oh yeah, he's done really well, blah, blah, blah. Let's give him a bit more. He deserves this. And if a woman asks, they're maybe like, oh, I don't know if I've seen this, or, you know, I don't want to put thoughts, but you know how it goes. And I think that would also line up with the fact that the discrepancy seems to be more in senior roles. So I think it's easy to plan your budget and say, okay, all our animators are in this day rate or salary, but then when it goes to negotiating, am I going to be lead animator, going to be supervisor, I think that's more on an individual basis, probably, at least in my experience. So that would maybe line up with the findings as well, that then those negotiations are the reason why then in the higher roles there's more of a difference. So no?
Not in my experience, I would say, as a producer asking, as we all know, this year has been really tough on budgets and going to people and saying, can we reduce your day rate because the budget just doesn't exist? I would say that everybody has been very flexible and it doesn't make a difference in gender as to the response.
That I wonder if it changes when it comes to TV or film, like if it's, I want to speak to all the producers in the world and get, like,
can we get one next time?
Get one of them. Mel's a producer, but she's, no, but just like, a really nice one.
But she's a good one. So, like, one of the ones, yeah, that is... They're out there ruining it for everyone else. Let's grill them.
Yeah, on the outside, I am. On the inside, I'm pure evil. Pure evil.
There is also something to note that there are occasions where females do achieve greater pay than their male counterparts. So it does mean that, you know, it is possible. It's not like there's a sort of flat out line that says women just can't achieve more, like depending on their experience or depending on their age or whatever. So I feel like that is hopeful, question mark. That's, you know,
I think the salary report is great because everybody now has got a point of reference, right? And they can see, okay, well, these people are being paid more than me, and in fact we should be paid the same. There's a span of cost there. So I think the salary report is really helpful for what we're talking about, that people, like, Danny, you said that people don't have conversations about rates or where they should be. Well, this is kind of indicative of the market, right? And so where you should be placing yourself. So well done, Hannah.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Yeah. No, I do. I think it's, you know, this is the beginning of that conversation, isn't it? It's kind of starting to see that people can reflect on the truth of what's out there. And maybe women can ask for more money because they can see that they should be and could get it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the dream. That's the hope. But yeah, so is there anything else anyone would like to say about this gender gap we're seeing? No? Moving on to the next discussion point. So given the inflationary effects on living costs and poor economic performance, it is not surprising that respondents' commentary reflects the squeeze on wages. And I think we started by all agreeing with that.
Yeah, this sucks, doesn't it? And this is where it feels all really hopeless, because what can we do about that? Apart from ask for more. Yeah, but then they say no. And then what? And I've been out of work for 4 months. And no one's halving my energy costs in that time, or putting them to zero. So
yeah, because I think it is good. It's good to remember that as much as freelancers and salary people are feeling this, like studios and production houses are also being squeezed. Well, I imagine, like I imagine it's happening across the board.
Yeah, I think it's definitely had an impact, you know, right across the board. And I think, you know, that appetite for spending, I think, has just dropped, hasn't it? Especially for the larger projects. And I think so many clients are just holding, sitting tight, waiting to see how things pan out. So for us anyway, we're not necessarily getting an absolute negative. Things are not happening. It's just, there's just a nervousness, you know, that sort of pause. And there's no real answers. So I think, you know, it's very difficult to be able to sort of plan ahead for, you know, how that's going to change in the coming year, really. I mean, I think for us, we've kind of diversified a little bit more. So we've done a lot more sort of illustration as well as animation and a bit of consultancy. And I think I've heard that from quite a few people, actually, that they're just spreading out a little bit more, looking at other income streams. The same could be said for freelancers, you know, are more animators looking at illustration and other work streams. I don't know. I don't know what everybody else's experience is with that.
Yeah, I think ours is very, very similar, because this is a hopefully temporary economic downturn. We're the same issue with our clients, in that is caution, where they're going to hold back. They're not going to make investments at this time. They're waiting for things to settle back down again. And then hopefully we can move into a different sort of era. And we've done the same thing. We've diversified as well. So we're looking at things like photography and illustration in order to kind of, you know, supplement the income that's coming in. So, yeah, I think that's a similar story.
I would say that this year has been really bad for budgets commercially, like ridiculous, to the point where we're like, what do you mean you can't spend 15 grand on, you know, on the, when it's like massive multi-million pound companies. And we've tried to be as amenable as possible, and it's been pretty awful having to go to people and say the budgets aren't there, would you be able to work for a lower day rate, knowing that everybody's really struggling. There are so many people moving out of London in the animation industry, and that saddens me that there's not going to be that community within London. Like, I went for a drink with some crew the other day, and four people were talking about how they can't afford to stay in London anymore. You know, and that's after I've said to them, oh, sorry, we don't have the money to pay you the full day rate. And so, I mean, again, it's not just this industry, it's worldwide. The economic, you know, situation is not great, but it's awful to see that it's actually properly directly affecting people. You know, it's not just meaning they can't go out for a drink on a night out, it means that they're having to really rethink the way that they live their lives and do what they do. Again, it's gone bleak again, hasn't it? I brought it down again. But hopefully it'll get better. There we go.
But I think it's important to talk about it, and that, like Danny was saying, like, you know, you don't feel alone, like you realise that you're not the only one going through it, and that everyone feels like shit, especially people working remotely can just feel so isolated and think it's all them, like maybe it's to do with the level of their skill, the output that they're doing, when actually it's just what's happening across the industry. So yeah, hopefully something like this will make people feel a little bit more reassured that it's not them. Despite the fact that it will be heartbreaking to know that everyone is also struggling as well.
Yeah, there's just not enough budget to just bring lots of different people in. You know, it has to be quite creative producing as to how we're going to get the outcome, because the budget may have been halved, but people's rates haven't been halved. So maybe we have to have fewer people and we don't deliver as many flourishes as we would have done on the previous one. You know, we're having to adjust to it rather than say, no, we don't want that job. Because it's that choice, isn't it? It's like someone comes to you with a rubbish budget, you can say, absolutely not, we're not going to work for that. Or you can say, okay, we'll work for it and we'll be able to pay some people. You know, so it's, yeah, it's tricky.
I think it's really hard as well, because I think so many people's cushions have dwindled. So, you know, I think it's that you've already gone through, you know, this COVID and the year prior to that, people were still, you know, it's still very slow. So last year's salary report obviously reflected all of those, the impact of all that, didn't it? And I think, you know, we talked about it, how, you know, remote work and is the market going to open up? And I think on top of that, having a really difficult year, I think people's resilience and, yeah, just their financial cushions, if they've got savings, have obviously been eaten into. So I think it's really tough. But yeah, like I say, I think I've heard, you know, freelancers and studio owners have all, you know, talked about how they're, as you're saying, Melissa, just backing projects into the budget rather than trying to be creative and, you know, looking at ways that they can sort of push expectations. They're really just trying to meet those requirements just to meet the budgets, basically.
I'm really leaning into the small good things that are happening to me through all this, and especially this month. I am being literally kept alive by two tiny micro studios who have just bent over backwards looking for something that they could have me on for like 2 days here, 1 day there. I had a meeting with their producer today who's just like, let's find you something even if it's a day. I've earned £700 this month and it will keep me alive. If I don't focus on those glimmers, like it's like that on paper is disgusting. And if you look at the salary report, there's no good news. But like, if I don't focus on those three freaking heroes out there, like it's easy to lose your mental health, isn't it? I'm trying so hard just to keep my head above the water. And there are good people out there who are fighting to help.
We spoke about that last year, didn't we? About building relationships with studios and producers and talking to people about the reality of that you're in. And, you know, I think that is something really important. And I should say also on a positive note that there have also been productions where there has been money and I've put people's rates up knowing that last time I asked them to go down. So I've been like, you know, I'll give you an extra £50 a day because the money's there, you know. So keep talking, keep the relationships going and, you know,
yeah, I think that's so important to make sure that people are still developing those relationships, especially in this remote time and kind of getting back to how we can kind of help one another out. I'm going to move on to the next point. I'm just realising how bleak these all are, so I'm so sorry to just constantly like, and now this. But yeah, the next point is... both day rate and salary respondents have shared very similar concerns about the fairness of current pay rates. 40% of respondents provided their thoughts on the reasons for unfair pay levels. Day rate employees have felt the economic downturn more sharply than those on annual salaries, with the pressure on them to work for lower pay and facing fewer job opportunities. Whereas salaried staff experience smaller pay rises or pay freezes and increased workloads and higher levels of responsibility than their pay grade justified. We've touched upon that a little bit already. But yeah, is there anything, as a day rate person, Danny, is there anything that you'd like to say about pressure to work for lower pay, facing fewer opportunities?
Facing fewer opportunities, yeah, I can tick that box, definitely. But the conversations I have had when something potential has come my way or I've reached out to someone else, like they are trying to meet me somewhere where I will be happy. So that's really positive. And one of those glimmers that I'll grab onto with both hands. It is really the lack of opportunities, though. I am normally like, my fellow calls me like master of spies. Like, I know who is developing a TV show and when, usually. I will have found out through one of my sparrows, and I don't know anything at the minute. Like, it's like I'm looking through the wrong end of the binoculars. I've got no idea what's coming up. And that's really scary because without something on the horizon, I can't relax. I cannot relax until there's going to be like, oh, I don't know. I don't know how to answer this question because like this is what's pushing my mood to the floor. Like it's just hanging on in there, like we've been saying. Just focus on the good. When it does happen, I'm raring, I'm ready. Like I've used the time to like redo my website. I invested in like a business course because like the last time I came on this podcast, I had my ass handed to me by you girls and I was like, okay, I need to grow up a little and just stop waiting for things to happen. So I've been really proactive and I'm trying to make my own opportunities where I feel like maybe I can't trust that the industry won't do this to us again. And that's no bad thing, is it, to like take responsibility for that. So I have been actually called outreaching to direct clients to try in that for the first time, which is, it's been interesting and it's kept me busy, but fruitless so far, but it's keeping my mood up. And then obviously in the meantime, I've got those little gigs here and there because I've been really honest with studios and people that I know very well in those studios, and they're happy to just throw me some crumbs.
That's great, though. I feel like it's that thing we spoke about before about diversifying. I feel like we don't know that this is going to be the last time that this happens to the industry. And for the longevity of people's careers, it is good to think about how they can make money in other ways, whether that's like going into teaching or teaching online courses or making products, selling. Yeah.
Or even just using different software. You know, there might be a project that comes in. Say it has to be done in Photoshop, the cleanup is all in Photoshop. Practice, if you're not working, you know, practice, hone your skill on that, do stuff for your showreel, because that, I know, again, it's like soul destroying that you're having to spend your time doing that, but the more softwares on your list is always very helpful, I would say. You know, have a go at After Effects, see what else you can do on that to try and sort of comp your own work, all these little things.
But okay, so Lena, as somebody who is salaried, have you experienced smaller pay rises or pay freezes and increased workloads and higher responsibilities than their pay grade justified? Is that something that you've noticed in and around friends or?
Yep.
Yeah, could tick all these boxes. pretty much that, yeah. I mean, you can be grateful that you have a job, right, in the current climate. And I think that's why this also plays out, because people can't play the, oh, well, then I leave card, because that's usually the card that gets you something. But it's tough at the moment. So, yeah, I think the pay freezes definitely happened. Obviously, the strikes have affected visual effects quite a bit, and also even us with the actors not being available to record their lines. So there's been a lot of like, no, we can't, we just can't, we're missing out on a big bunch of work that we were supposed to have. So there's a lot of that happening for sure.
That's tough. Yeah. I wasn't sure how much the writer's strike had impacted sort of.
Oh,
a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's maybe because, especially in London, we have a few companies who diversified, I guess. They do feature, they do TV, they do visual effects. And obviously the visual effects branch has probably suffered the most because a lot of things stopped filming and stopped writing. And then obviously it takes also quite long until they start filming again and until the work actually makes it to the visual effects department. I think word on the streets is that by summerish this year it'll be okay again, but that's definitely affected companies like hugely, where they then have to be like, oh, we couldn't, I don't know, extend or keep a lot of people because we're not getting visual effects projects in, so we can't just throw out salary rises to anyone, which is of course unfair to the individual person, because like it's said here also, like you're having higher responsibility for what you signed up first. So yeah, I think that's kind of the nature of that situation. And I don't really know what the solution would be.
I guess at least with the writer's strike, now that it's over, but I guess, is there a concern that because the budgets will have changed due to the writer's strike's renegotiations, that's going to have a negative impact?
Yeah, also like the backlog, I guess. There's still like, just because work's coming back in doesn't mean companies have recovered fully from missing out on that. So I guess even though in summer maybe the work might be back to normal, I think until salaries have maybe recovered might be a bit longer. I don't know. I mean, I hope not, but
yeah, something to be aware of.
Ooh, just one little thought about people have feelings about fairness. I don't have the source again of where I heard this on a podcast, unfortunately, but there was a big research done on how it actually matters if you care about your employees being happy at work or like satisfied or whatever. It actually matters more that they feel paid fairly, in the sense of that everyone gets paid the same or everyone in the level gets paid the same, compared to people thinking they're not earning enough. Like, that's actually, if you earn a certain amount, but everyone else earns the same, you're actually more satisfied with your job than if you're earning less than someone who's doing the same job, that then the unfairness feels like it's like a big part of people feeling like they're not being paid enough, which I thought was quite interesting, which something companies feel like should look into if they care about the employees being satisfied. And, you know, it makes a big difference, apparently, if everyone's paid the same as you would expect it.
I guess there's that sense that you're all in it together, really, isn't
yeah.
it? So it's the at least it kind of
exactly,
you know,
yeah,
yeah, absolutely. I could totally understand. Yeah,
I wonder why it's not that
competitive salaries.
What? How? Why people are paid differently within the same company?
Just how we haven't all got together by now and figured out a TV band system or a film band system. Like, it's been around for a wee bit now. Just so some geniuses.
Going back to what you said before, Danny, about doing a budget and you have a certain amount in that, that's definitely true. And within that budget, you might have like a lead animator, senior animators, mid and junior, and you have a number in for that. I would not say that everybody who is a senior animator is at the same skill level. So there's I'm going to make up some numbers, but say it's between 300 and 350 a day for a senior animator. In commercials, there is a big span of what you may get from that person that day. So some people I wouldn't be happy to pay the top end of that. I'm happy to pay them 300 a day, which is a great rate, great daily rate. But I need, as a producer, to have a bit of scale so that it's fairer on the person who's doing more, you know? So that I'm saying, yeah, you totally deserve to be top end here, there. And the other person who maybe hasn't got as much experience, and that's why they're not as quick or not producing as much stuff, they're still getting a really good rate. But it's, you know, I feel like having a specific rate for each.
But the study was about happiness, though, not skill. So if two people, if everyone, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, completely with you. But that particular study that Alina was talking about happiness, right? Like, you've been more fulfilled if you all feel like you're being paid the same. But it doesn't work maybe in our industry because of that, like, gap in skills, gap in speed is what I use in my negotiations. Like, I'm fast, give me more.
Yeah, because would you feel the same if you were outputting a lot more work than somebody else who's like senior, still senior, but being paid the same? That might then become a frustration.
Yeah, would you be happy if you were being paid the same as someone who didn't create as much or didn't have the same input, or, you know, So I kind of think, like, as a producer, just to have a little band in your head of, on this project, we can afford to pay between 300 and 350 or 200 and 250, whatever it is. And then within that, people can negotiate.
It's hard, isn't it? Because, like, junior, senior, lead doesn't sometimes marry up with top animator, new animator, does it? Like, there's so many grey areas here.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that sounds good, though, having a range, and then it's sort of, at least you can know a bit where you stand as well. Like, a junior, you're in between this range, and the more skills you get, you can feel like you can increase it. I've just got another point on the fairness. Below point is that even though 90% of respondents have increased their rates or kept them the same as last year, 43% of respondents still don't believe their current rates to be fair. So some of the themes on relating to a sense of unfairness in annual salaries are low pay for experience and skill set, workload and responsibility increase, inflation costs and living cost increase, employer practice and approaches, individual experience and approaches. I guess it's sort of stuff that we've more broadly spoken about.
It is kind of indicative of the world at large, isn't it, and the economy. But I guess for salaried positions, when employers can sort of take care of their employees in other ways, you know, if they can't offer a monetary increase, or, you know, are there other ways that, you know, perhaps studios or other employers could be adding other benefits, whether it's 4-day weeks or flexible hours or other professional development allowances or additional holidays. You know, would that help the general, that dissatisfaction, at least of employees, feel taken care of more? Even though obviously money would be, you know, the preferable thing, but you know, if that's not an option because studios and companies are struggling also.
I think that's definitely a good negotiation tip for anyone listening, especially because they're looking at their budgets and they have these numbers, and sometimes they just can't give you more. But maybe this is more for bigger projects, but you can definitely try and negotiate holidays because that doesn't change the numbers. You're still on the same salary, but you just have a few more days off that, from what I understand, usually the math still checks out. So they're more willing to give that. So that's definitely one to try.
That's good to know. Yeah, because I think it would be great to sort of think about anything we could offer our audience about ways that they can, like language we can provide to help the people negotiate, all the extras. Also better salaries, I mean. But there's also the themes on reasons relating to a sense of unfairness in day rate. We've talked about low budgets, less work available, cost of living, employer practice and approaches, and individual experience and approaches.
I don't really understand what employer practice and approaches means.
So we asked people to indicate their thoughts on the reasons that they were not getting a fair day rate. And one of the themes that came up was employer practices and approaches. And examples of what we mean by that is people in the comments noted that their day rates had been dictated by hiring studios, the sense of what they could afford, and that companies were bidding low budgets, meaning they negotiate down freelancers' day rates. Some people felt that certain studios that have more frequent work for freelancers were able to keep their wages low by refreshing their team. Others mentioned that often the studio tries to negotiate their rates down. And then finally, people mentioned freelance culture of silence around rates empowers studios to keep their rates low.
Okay. Yeah, I think hearing that from someone who, you know, I've said already that a bit sad about how people see studios and producers, it's so cynical. It's such a cynical view of the people with the money, right? That's how it seems. It's absolutely a trickle-down effect. Of course it is, because that is the world that we live in. But I can tell you now, we're not doing it for any other reason than the budgets have been slashed, and really slashed. I would be embarrassed to do it if I was like, oh, brilliant, I'll ask if I can pay less so that my margin's bigger. You know, we spoke about this last year as well, and how it's not like I'm being asked to make more money out of people. I'm just trying to get a job out the door. And it makes me a bit gutted that people believe that it's at the cost of crew. I think it's a really cynical way to see this economic situation of, like you say, worldwide situations that we find ourselves in. So I hope that people listening sort of realise that no one's trying to rip anyone off here. It's just that the budgets and the scripts are not available. The projects are not coming in. And so we need to adjust accordingly. And that's everybody. That's from top to bottom.
I agree with Melissa. It is really difficult when you're running a studio. And I think our approach is, where we were talking about sort of streamlining projects to respond to a budget, that may also equate in an equivalent day rate, but fewer days. But then you're doing less for it, kind of thing. So it's not, we try to accommodate as much as we can, but we need to keep the studio running as well. Otherwise we all go under. So I agree. It's, I can understand people's frustrations totally, but it does feel rather cynical.
It's definitely fear-based, isn't it? Like, well, some of those comments are feelings, not, there's no factual wording in there. And I think I wrote one, so I can talk about that if you want. I feel like we don't get that top-down view that you guys are privy to, and that's not communicated to us in our negotiations or in our rejections. And so we're building a story based on the fact I'm sat on my own in the Welsh Valleys with the words I have in front of me. And I'm connecting some dots falsely all by myself. I'm forming a narrative and it's the whole world's gone to shit and everyone hates me. along with this lower number that everyone is seemingly collectively throwing at me. And so it is giving me the false sense of collusion somewhere. Do you know what I mean? And because I don't have maybe the higher up connections that then join the dots further and give me the full picture, I am sat on my own forming a story, and the story is based on my worth, and that's it. It's fear and feeling, really. Like,
I think you bring up a really good point, Danny, because I think there is a responsibility for us as we run studios to explain to people what is happening more clearly, so that and also to explain how they're valued, which I think you said yourself, Danny, that you've got a few micro businesses which are keeping you afloat, who clearly highly value you because they want to keep you afloat, you know. So it's not just compassion. It's definitely not pity. It's because you're bloody good. That's why.
Thanks so much.
So, but I do think that's fine. But we do have a responsibility to make sure that people understand, so that that picture is opened up.
I would agree with that, because I think that as somebody who sort of speaks to a lot of crew, not as many producers, I've had people ask me, oh, if a producer asks, like, lowers my rate, do they get that? Like, is that, do they make a cut of that? What?
No, I'm going to say that out loud. Everybody, no.
I'm glad we have clarification. Yes. Because it's just that, like, missing, like, I think that crew and production can be kept so separate that the crew can just feel like, oh, what is happening? And like Danny's saying, you start to build a story, and it's often, especially if you know, you haven't been getting the jobs and it's been prolonged time, like I think for a lot of people that has this year, that story gets more and more like blown out of proportion. And I think it's, yeah, important for studios to and producers to like maintain those relationships, explain a little more about what's going on. I think actually that goes to a good point that we have, that studios/employers have an important role to play in handling expectations and developing trust when negotiating salary levels. Yeah, which I think is kind of what
lots of nods.
Yeah.
Lots of
nods. But yeah, was there anything further you guys wanted to explore on that one? Because I think handling expectations is important as well. Like,
I think kind of about what Danny just said about fear-based kind of comments in negotiations or just the whole process. I think it's good to keep in mind probably that, especially now in the last year, because it's been so tough, money in the world that we live in, money and having a roof over your head, all that, it's like the base of the pyramid of needs, right? It's the absolute base. So it will induce the most fear in us. Like, it does make it hard for us to negotiate rationally because it's the base level. So people will be scared and will act on feelings a lot, probably, especially this year because it's been so dire and it's really concerning and actually a bit of a survival situation. So I think maybe that can be, I don't know if it's helpful, kept in mind when negotiating salaries at the moment. I mean, like I said, I think the people that are here on this call are probably well aware of all these things. I just want to validate also the people who have to negotiate with bigger companies, where I wouldn't promise that there's not a CEO or someone up there who's making a lot of money while everyone else is struggling. The smaller ones I can hear, like the little heroes that we're having here and stuff. Like, I think there's a bit of a more of a human component, whereas in the big ones, it's sometimes, again, I'm putting dots together, but I'm pretty sure the world we live in, the beautiful capitalism, that's definitely happening. I don't think there's a CEO that's like, okay, I'll lower my salary then so this employee can have a livable wage or whatever. I don't think that's happening very much.
I think people have to also sort of focus on what they can control, because like you say, it can spiral so easily, can't it? Especially when it's fear-based. And, you know, I think for things like salaried positions, just pushing to have, you know, regular reviews and keeping sort of document your achievements and, you know, any skills and contributions that you've achieved over the year. And, you know, just make sure there's space for you to share that, and for your employer as well, to sort of to have that transparent conversation. But I think just focusing on the things that you can control in a salary position, that's perhaps easier. There's more structure. I don't know, maybe in a day rate situation, just documenting things like if you do have to reduce your day rate, then have it as a discounted rate on a contract. So you've always got that as a reference, that it's a one-time discount. And, you know, then it can always refer back to, well, this is actually my rate. I negotiated down for you on that one occasion. So I think just being really strategic yourself and really looking at things that you can control is so important.
That's really good advice. I think, yeah, your response should be, okay, on this occasion, you know, and write that down. Yeah, I think that's great advice. Because that then goes into a spreadsheet and you don't want people to not write next to that spreadsheet has reduced rate for this project, you know. Yeah, it's great.
That's a good peek behind the pipe, behind the curtain. And also great to have as like a record for freelancers in their invoices, like you're remembering this is not my worth. This is a one-time deal. Any more on that, do we think? Otherwise, I'm going to go on to the next one. Another discussion point we had was it is also evident that the need to be capable of effective negotiation is felt more keenly than ever. Every time new work is entered into, while this is less frequent for salaried staff, it is very frequent for day rate employees. Respondents in all pay contexts felt that negotiation skills are crucial in the industry to secure a pay rate that feels fair and reflects their skills and ability, which I think we've spoken about a lot. But was there anything specific anyone wanted to say while we're here?
I love negotiating. I'll just say that. I've got templates. I'm a queen at it. I love it.
One thing that I'd like to say is, so don't be disheartened if someone says no. The next person you speak to might say yes, or the first person that you spoke to on a different project might say yes. You know, keep pushing for it, keep trying. And the second that the producer has the budget available, they will say yes to you if they feel that it works, that you deserve that on the level you are and all those things. But keep trying, don't give up. I would definitely say that.
I was just going to say, it is a difficult skill, negotiation. It's quite complicated, isn't it? It's not, maybe it comes naturally to some people, but I think for the majority of us, it is, you kind of learn it through experience and trial and error, really. So don't feel bad if your negotiation skills aren't, you know, right up to the top level. And I don't know if Danny has any tips for us.
I've got a whole episode on my podcast about this.
A masterclass.
Take the emotion out of it by having templates. That's what I do. I've got phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four already written down. I've never really got to phase four before, but I've come close. The first one just has some wording about what I'm expecting, and then it goes down the levels if they come back to me with something else that I'm not happy with. Usually I'm fairly happy with a counter offer. Usually their first offer is lowballing, and then I think that's part of the dance. And if you can remove the emotion from it and treat it as a dance, you don't take that emotional hit from that first number is the biggest thing to learn, I think. Get over that. Have a template, fire back a response. Having evidence as well, like other things that I've worked on that are just like this or just like what you're asking for. I was doing this and I had this. Again, templated, just so I can pop in those studios and titles and those evidence. So they've got facts as well. Usually at that point they say, okay, great, fine, yep. Or it might be £10 lower a day. And I'm like, all right, babes, fine. And I always G myself up as well first time. So like, have you heard that saying, don't go shopping on an empty stomach? Do not negotiate from a place of desperation. So I will make myself meditate, listen to I am affirmations, whatever the hell gets you into your highest vibes, so that when you're writing the emails, you feel better nice about yourself.
I like that. I was just going to say, because I think there's a lot of focus on negotiating and the skill of that, which is important. I think a lot of, especially juniors and new people, definitely don't know where to put the mark and what to expect. And they will get that first lowball number and think like, oh, okay, I guess I'll just, that's it. And I guess after a few years, you kind of know about the dance and all that stuff. I want to kind of sometimes take the pressure off for people who've been in the industry who kind of know how to negotiate and still don't get there. Raises, I think sometimes we also need to take the pressure off us and just say it's, you can negotiate as much as you want, as good as you want. Sometimes you just don't get it because of other reasons. And I feel like the pressure needs to be taken off. It always has a bit of a victim blaming vibe to me. Right, so we're the ones who are not getting enough money and we have to put all the work in to make it better, where I think actually maybe it needs to be addressed.
Hmm. Sometimes it's useful to say no. It's like psychologically it's useful to say, nope, sorry, this isn't going to work. See ya.
Yeah, give a feeling of control, isn't it, where actually you can say no to things and move on to the next one. But yeah, I think that's important to remember. You know, sometimes there just isn't budget and that's not on the freelancer. People keep blaming themselves for not getting the rates that they want. But when the money's not there, it's not there. And I think it's good to be able to, you know, accept that sometimes and then try for the next one.
I think the more you do it as well, the less precious you are about it. I think it's, you just got to keep putting, you know, quotes out there, get your name out there. You'll care less gradually. You know, you just, the volume of which you do it, I think really helps.
I think for all the, just a quick addition for all the people in annual salary is the chasing, the negotiation and the feedback like regularly is on you. I think that's really, because if you're in a company for a long time, it's hard to get big salary jumps, like that just doesn't happen, right? You usually have to leave a company and get a higher rate there. So if that is your reality, then I think it's good to at least have regular salary negotiations where you get small jumps at least, so that within maybe 2 years you can say actually you've quite improved your salary. So definitely it might feel that you're annoying them, but it doesn't matter. And you're not annoying them. It's like you need to do that.
I was quite surprised actually in the report where it said, I can't remember the number, but it was quite high, asked for their rate to be reviewed either after a project or after a year. And it made me think about the ceiling of people's salaries. So we've all got a ceiling that, you know, I myself as a freelance producer know what people would be willing to pay for me. And if I was every year going, okay, I'm going to add to my salary because that's what's expected, I wouldn't be able to go higher than a certain point. And so, again, that's something for people to think about when they're negotiating, is that there is a limit to how much, I'm not even talking about budget, but I'm just talking expectations need to be realistic as well of what your salary or what your rate in the role that you do will be. You know, we'd all love to be earning 100 grand, but that's not going to happen because that's not going to happen. Yeah, I mean, that would be really nice, right? So, yeah, that surprised me that people are like, oh, yeah, end of every project, I put my rate up, because I know you've got a bit more experience, but at what point do you have to go, okay, I can't go any higher? I suppose that's about responsibility of studios to go back and say, oh, the kind of top rates that we would be looking to pay people is X amount. Sorry, that's kind of where we draw the line.
I think that'd be great to know from a studio, like what their bandwidth, what they're like, how much that is. Because I think Danny was saying last time as well, it's like, it's so strange because you get to a point where you're a senior and then you hit a ceiling and then it's like, oh, now what? Is that like forever? This is the rate? And I guess depending, you know, whether you move companies, move locations, that might just be how much it is.
But I also think, like, during COVID, I'm not sure about in TV work, but there were more scripts because people weren't shooting and budgets were higher in COVID, because I don't know why that happened. I'm not an economist, but that's why that happened. That definitely happened. So people could ask for more then, and then you could go, okay, sure. And now we're not. So again, the negotiation and the ability to negotiate makes a massive difference depending on when you're negotiating. And you shouldn't automatically expect that every year you're going to get an extra percentage on your wage, because I don't think that it's realistic to feel that way. Sorry, guys.
I feel like that's the problem though, isn't it? Because looking, inflation goes up every year. And the problem why we can't buy houses, why we have the lives that we have, is because salaries are not going up at the same rate as inflation. That's the problem. So it isn't, unfortunately, realistic that we're getting a percentage every year, but we should. I don't want people to say, okay, this is what it is. This is what we have to fight for. That salaries do go up. I know it's very complicated and there's a lot, you know, dependent on that. And probably that has to come from whoever makes the budgets and whatever. But I think that should be the goal anyways, even though, especially now with the economy and stuff, which again, it makes no sense. Inflation has been up. Everything's so expensive and our salaries are going down. It's not okay. It's not how it's supposed to be. It's not how it was designed.
I totally agree with you. I just want to say that. It's not right. It's the bigger picture. But it's the reality. And I think that when you're trying to work out what your rate should be or your salary should be, you have to keep the reality in mind. I, on a political level, I completely agree with you. But there's also the reality of getting work.
Oh, for sure.
And getting that balance right.
For sure.
Have you found, Melissa, that more people are negotiating on terms? If they can't negotiate on price, are they sort of pushing for, I mean, do people ever pay, you know, for a hold? Would you ever pay a deposit up front to guarantee their availability or elements like that?
No, I haven't actually had anyone ask for anything. That could potentially be because I work with a lot of the same people from project to project. So I know them and they know that I'm not going to be, you know, taking advantage of them and being fair with them. I've had some people previously, not recently, say, these are the times that I work, I don't do overtime, I will need to be paid for overtime. Maybe that's something that could be brought in. It could be like, okay, I'll work for this lower rate, but these are the hours that we do for this, right? And then anything beyond that, then, you know, you don't get free overtime thrown in on my rate, which a lot of people do. But I have to be honest that no one's ever really done that, and they should. If they can, if they say, yeah, I can work on a lower rate, but I'm going to be doing, especially senior level people could probably have a bit more leeway by saying, that's cool, but I'm going to do fewer hours for that rate.
I'm literally writing this down.
It's just fun. I think it's, you know, again, I think we, you know, you learn from each other, don't you? And I think so many, you know, especially sort of smaller studios that are perhaps going direct to client or to other agencies, that we're used to sort of negotiating on so many different levels or different terms. Things like having, you know, deposit paid up front for certain work or block booking for a project fee rather than, we wouldn't necessarily negotiate on day rates. We would negotiate on value or on the project. And I think there must be a lot of overlap that freelancers can draw from that. Don't just try it. And you probably get pushback on for some places where it just doesn't work, it's not a good fit, but I'm sure there must be some learnings that freelancers can take from the sort of rather larger studio negotiations. I guess it's just accessing it, isn't it, and having conversations around it.
I'm curious whether you guys think that universities have a part to play in that, because I don't know how freelancers access that information. And obviously, you know, smaller studios are doing that from learned experience, and bigger studios, it's been instilled in them for longer. But yeah, I just don't know how you attain those skills. Like, I guess it is more open conversations with producers, or does anyone have any ideas about how that might happen?
I feel like I've been to a course.
Oh, really?
Definitely at the big, yeah, I think it was a specific one for animation, like just a course, like it was one evening workshop or something. I don't know how I found that, but I guess as a new person in the industry, maybe you don't know where to look for or where to find those. But I guess a general negotiation course could help in the first place anyways.
Yeah, maybe on screen skills or something. There's like,
yeah,
I have to have a look.
I've heard universities don't talk about this to some degree on purpose to not discourage people, because I think if you expose to them how uncertain your job is going to be and how much negotiating and all that stuff, how complicated it's going to be, there might be a few people who are like, maybe I'm not in for this. I've heard that. There's a bit of a, I don't know.
That's highly irresponsible though, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. Oh, for sure.
Preparing people.
Yeah.
I mean, I think from what I hear, they give like a little care package for 1 year after they've graduated. So they will, you have someone to talk to, at least, which sounds good. Yeah. I'm mentoring two people at the moment who are fresh out of uni, and they said, now I'm like feeling really stressed. I'm like, I need to make sure these people get a job, and I don't know. They have a little like care thing afterwards for a year, where the uni's at least helping them to get a job or have a person to talk to them too. Definitely they're not offering negotiation advice there, because I had to talk to them a bit to ask for more money.
Yeah, I think it'd be really helpful if all that they say is your starting rate should be between X and Y, nothing more, just that. Because the fact that people are being paid 40 quid a day or 80 quid a day is despicable, and I don't know where they're being paid that, and it's illegal. They should not be being paid that. Even as if they're doing internships, they should be being paid more than that. I know where I am at the moment, we would, for an internship, it would be London Living Wage. You know, that's what people should be being paid. So people should know what the minimum wage is, and they should absolutely, even if it's the first job that you're doing, not be earning less than that. But it would be nice for universities to say, this is the base rate that you should start off at, and then the sky's the limit, but this is where you're coming in at.
I do a talk every year at universities, up to three, but my usual one is Leeds, and it's always about negotiating or the freelance side of things or finding your first job, etc. And I think that they maybe don't teach it because they don't know it. So they get someone like me in to do an hour talk, but it is not drilled into them. I can only do so much in an hour, and they cannot relate to me. They can't. They just sit there nodding, going, great, great, taking notes. But like, if they can't put that straight into practice, like I did the first years this year, I've long forgotten what I've said by the time they get into that. And that number would be very erroneous. So yeah, it's tough. I think maybe lecturers don't actually know.
I agree with you, Danny. We do the same thing with the University of the West of England, and we go in on pretty much an annual basis and have that general industry talk in a very short period of time. And as you say, there's only so much that you can kind of impart with people. And there is a sense that lecturers don't really know. They don't really have that experience. Some of them have experience in industry, but some of them are academics. So,
but all it would take is an email to a producer or a studio and go,
yeah,
I've got some students, I'd like to give them some guidance. That's all that would take. And I don't really think it's up to the industry to give that information. It should be up to the teaching element of it to find out that information. I mean, there's lots of stuff beyond finances that people go from university to go into the industry. There's such discrepancy of it all fitting together. And I know that a lot of studios and producers and animators do their best to try and bridge a little gap there. But I think you're probably right. I think maybe people just don't know, and so they don't pass on that information. And that needs to be better. That needs to be addressed.
I agree. We've just got one last one on the points of discussion, and then we can go on to recommendations quickly. So our last discussion point is general information on salary levels would be appreciated by animators, and this survey is an attempt to contribute to this broader awareness and encourage more openness in the discussion of pay. So yeah, I guess I hope that people are listening to this podcast and we'll go on and chat more about pay, because I think Mel said last time, people have to talk to one another as well about pay and what they're getting paid on jobs, and because that's the only way you can kind of figure the reality of it out. Yeah, does anyone have anything they'd like to add?
I was going to say on the last point, and this is kind of perfect, but this is that we've all been gifted our new ceilings by the She Drew That salary survey. I can just look through that and pick up some numbers that I'd never heard of, and they're my new ceiling. That's accessible to all of us. It's so empowering. And I haven't had to talk to anyone.
This is much more realistic than the, it was the other one from last year, when I was like,
oh, the VFX.
That is unrealistic. I think this feels more in line with what I would expect on a commercials level. I don't really know about TV or film, but it felt way more realistic, a guide for sure.
I'd say it's really, really valuable, and hopefully on the next report we can really flesh out stop motion so that it is more reflective of what is happening in industry.
Yeah, that would be great. I think now that we've got more roles within this report compared to the last, which was small and not reflective of all the job titles. But I feel like this one, we can definitely get more numbers in each category and gradually grow our understanding of what everyone's getting paid. But great. So shall I jump on to recommendations then? Number one, to continue the survey next year to provide a real-time salary data for UK animation workers. Number two, university animation courses need to reflect the importance of negotiation skills in their curriculum to better prepare animators to obtain appropriate pay in the industry, which I think we've spoken about. And three, some animators could benefit from the availability of negotiation skill training or toolkits to support their pursuit of fair pay. And then four, more studios and employers need to recognise the benefits of developing good relationships and trust with animators when negotiating pay. I feel like we've like unpacked quite a lot of the this already. So I did pop a few notes in though in case you wanted to discuss anything, one of which is AI having an effect on anything? Does anyone have any opinions about AI's looming shadow?
Oh, I have so many opinions. because it's being talked about so much, studios, creatives. I am very open to the fact that AI could be used just as an extension software and that things can be very positive about using AI. I am a little sad about it in a creative way, that the kind of soul of some elements may go, and that makes me a bit sad. I think it is having an effect. I know of a project where there was an effects animator who found out that AI was being used in that project and walked off the project, which I thought was really interesting. Just went, no, not having anything to do with that. And I think, for me, as a producer, I don't know enough as to how much I'm allowed to use it in a production, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like the buck shouldn't stop with me. I feel like that is something that someone else needs to make a decision of, and then I will decide if I feel comfortable with it. I think we're in such early stages, and I don't want to be scared of it. Because I remember saying that, like, cameras on mobile phones, why would you have that? That's ridiculous. I don't want to be that person again. But I think we have to embrace it. I think that creatives need to hone their skills on it and understand it, because I think it's inevitable. But I just don't feel like it's as good as a creative person putting their input into something yet. But it might be, which is why we can't ignore it.
I think until the sort of grey areas over copyright are really, nailed down, I can't see how it's going to be fully integrated in a commercial context. But I think that's coming. I don't know. I think there's a lot. I mean, certainly from our point of view, I think a lot of brands still want very bespoke work in their sort of true voice. It's a bespoke by a human. There's no issue over copyright. And I think that still is a factor. But it is, I'm sure, on the horizon that will change. I think it's such early days. I don't know if anybody else has encountered copyright kind of.
I feel like, Alina, of you, it must affect your work so much from the VFX point of stuff.
Well, I'm a bit torn. So I think I agree it needs to be embraced. It's coming anyways. I always find it hard where we draw the line about what AI is, because I'm already using a crazy software that does crazy stuff for me that I couldn't do with plugins that calculate things. And so now there's just another plugin, but that can do quite a lot, which is scary, and which could maybe replace us or not. So I think seeing that it's just, like you said, as artists, we need to just like get a grip on it. Because there is a lot of things already that the computer does for us, right? Like we're working, we're giving it a lot of input. And I guess the AI that's out now, the input needs to be less skilled. Like you don't need to learn software to create a beautiful image. You can just say, give me a painting in this style of this person. And that's scary because nobody needs to study to do that. But I think we're kind of using a lot of tools that help us do our job already. So I think I'm repeating myself that, again, I think maybe it's not on the artists to solve this, but it's on, like you said, like the copyright, that it needs to be handled properly from whoever decides to use it so that the artists don't suffer or like are being... I mean, I can see in a lot of also concept and stuff how someone doesn't hire a concept artist because they're like, can literally tell the machine.
Agencies are doing it themselves now. Like we're getting scripts with concept frames that two creators have sat down and gone, oh, you've been a Midjourney. It's like, oh, great. Lovely. You know, so they're kind of, it's good for them because they've got more creative input. It's a kind of a like creative coding role, isn't it? It's like working out the way to do it. But yeah, it's not always about copyright as well. I think that's a big thing that, you know, I think Adobe are trying to do like a closed AI where you can put your own stuff up there and you'll get a bit of money. You know, it's kind of like the next stock footage. So I don't know enough about it, but I feel like OpenAI, like where it's taking from just lots of information that people have signed away without even realizing, that is wrong. But I feel like maybe people can start to manipulate it and make it work for them. Creative people can do some illustrations and allow that to go into the system and be paid for it if it's used within the algorithm. I'm using words I don't understand, but
I think what happened initially was appalling. When it was certain organisations allowed this system to trawl the internet and use artists' work without the copyright being agreed was awful, absolutely awful. What I hope will come out of it is, as you say, that we'll end up with tools that are moral, ethical and legal, and also that maybe this will strengthen copyright. You know, maybe just so the process of litigation that's going to go on, because there are obviously big business interests which are going to defend their IP, they're going to defend their copyright, that perhaps that will strengthen copyright law. I don't know. Trying to see a positive. So it's seen that it isn't okay to do this, that it's not okay just to take images and use them and, you know, possibly.
I hope so. I wonder if it'll be what unionizes us properly, getting those, like getting together and getting those ground rules formalized, like in the actors.
One common enemy.
Yeah, because you know what? We were talking about it from a production point of view as well, and it was like, oh, you could just say you wanted to, you know, you've got this much money, you've got this much time, and you want to create this thing. And I was like, if I did that, I would not know how to run my production. If I let a computer decide how many people I should be having for how long, from like, that's not me doing my job. And so I would lose that skill of being able to look at a script and break it down and decide how many people need to do it and at what level. And I feel like it's not just the creative industries that will be affected by AI. It's also us spreadsheeters who, you know, try and figure all these things out. And I think that will make the difference between a good producer and a bad producer, if I'm really honest. Someone who understands how they got to the point that they got to. Hopefully that'll be the sort of difference between... It's the difference between going and getting an animation done on Fiverr by, you know, somebody who's going to knock something out and, yeah, it'll move, but is it going to look lovely, or having something with real quality? So hopefully that will be the difference as we move forward, even as it develops further and becomes better at creating animation. That's my hope.
I think we all hope this.
I think you're safe with stop frame though, aren't you, Emma? Do you think?
No, not really. Because all you need to do is plug it into a 3D printer and...
bloody hell.
I think it's the general problem that we're having with a lot of technology, that society general is not mature enough to deal with how fast technology is evolving. We as a society are not capable of dealing with this in a moral way, because money and all that stuff is more important. Now I made it bleak.
No, back to bleak. Shit. Right, I'll go through the other notes and see if there's anything anyone else wants to talk about.
I could talk for hours.
Well, I think the other ones we've covered about sort of, yeah, productions are struggling just as much as crew. But yeah, we had one note on crew's commitment to studios for the love of the work and culture that results in burnout and underpay and overworking.
I, again, was like, that's so cynical that you're like, it's for our love for the studios that we put ourselves in this position. First of all, studios shouldn't be expecting that from you. That is the most important thing here, that they shouldn't be expecting you to be overworked and underpaid. But you also need to take the responsibility where you draw your line. And that's difficult. And I understand that's very difficult. And it goes back to the negotiation skills. But like, don't die on your sword for a bit of animation. You know, it's, you have to take responsibility for yourself in the big wide world out there. And there's only so many favours that you should do for people. And if studios are taking advantage of you, walk away from that studio. You know, I know it's really difficult when you need the money or you need to make connections and all of those things, but crew's commitment to the studio for the love of the work just feels like, who's doing that? Who's...
I feel like I know the exact studio that that is aimed at, though. So it's happening. It's happening.
And why do you think people do that? Like, what's that love for the studio?
Because of fear. Because of fear. Because you only have one job for 6 months, and whatever work you're doing in these 6 months will define what your next job is going to be. And if you don't do well in this job, or if you have a feeling that you're not doing well, you're scared that you're going to get fired because there's so many other animators that can do it. Like, it's a very, this freelance and this project-based work is very fear-based, because your current job is to guarantee your next job. And especially young people who just need to start somewhere so they have something to apply with, just they need to do the jobs even though they feel maybe they're not being paid well or they're being taken advantage of. There's studios that run on the fact that junior people are being paid very low salaries, but because they can't start anywhere else. That's a fact, unfortunately. I think what's also, what I hear a lot, which a sentence that I'm very allergic to, is we should be so grateful that this is our job. No, I'm sitting in front of the computer 8 hours a week. I have a boss, I have responsibilities. This is a job like any other job. Yes, it's a bit extra fun, but we also have a lot more struggles than other people. So I feel like the sentence is being thrown around a lot, and that is stuck in people's head. Like, oh, I'm just glad I'm getting to do this passion and I'm doing an artsy job. And that's why people accept lower rates or are scared to lose the job or think they're going to get fired, which I think after a few years in the industry, you're like, they're not firing me. It's not happening.
Yeah, I suppose like I get that in a coming into the industry way. Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, even if you're in it, you need to, I remember myself always being like, oh, so I've worked on this project for 6 months now. I've not really gotten a good shot that I can put on my reel to then get another job with a higher rate, because I need to be challenged in this job to get a good shot for my reel to then ask for more money. And then you start panicking. It's a really weird cycle that's not healthy from an artist's point of view.
I wonder also if in the UK in particular, there is a kind of culture that devalues the artist, that this is something that's always been in the UK, that the arts and culture aren't valued, that the starving artist is a romantic figure, you know, and I think what you're saying is absolutely correct. But around that is that kind of, you know, it's not really a proper job, is it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd say the same thing, you know. It's great if you love what you do, but don't just do it for love. That's essentially, it's unprofessional. You know, professional means to do it for money. You know, it's basic form. So, you know. It's not a bloody hobby, is it?
I feel like it was written by someone who was a bit younger, though, and you do age out of that mentality, don't you? Like, there's a cut-off point between doing something for the love of it, not really knowing that's not the right way of doing it, and then not taking that bullshit moving forward. Like, I can pinpoint in my career when that happened, and I was like, nah.
Yeah, I think we all probably yeah. could, I would say, yeah.
I think during the pandemic, though, I feel like a lot of people burnt out from, like, overworking. There was lots of really fun projects and people were really enjoying the work and then just not saying no to it. And then it snowballs and suddenly you're like, oh, I am wrecked. And I think that's, like, an easy habit to get into, which is not necessarily, like, that's on, like, yeah, just trying to remove yourself from the work itself and remembering it is a job. It's not the be-all and end-all.
And I suppose it goes back to that fear again that Alina was saying. And, you know, I feel that as a freelancer, I'm only booked to a certain amount of time and then what, you know? So best not take that half day off to go and do this because, you know, that's a lot of money out of what I could be earning this week, you know? And this year, part of my kind of plan for this year was to take more time off. And say, okay, I should be having at least the days off that I would have if I was on a salary. You know, I should at least give myself that every 3 months, look at how many days off I've had in that 3 months. And it's harder when you're project-based because you kind of fall in love with the project and you want to be through that project. But then maybe think about saying, okay, do you know what? I'm going to just give myself 3 days off after that project's finished and allow myself some time. Or if a producer contacts you and says, are you free from X day, just add an extra day on from when you're free from, so you're giving yourself a break between projects. I know it's money and that's hard to, especially at the moment, to walk away from, but it's also about your mental health and your self-worth in that way. Important.
I think it's also vital just to get a perspective as well, because until you sort of come out of a situation, you can't really see the bigger picture. I think when you're really in the weeds and, like, you've got, you know, worries and or pressures on you, it's really hard to get that perspective and to think, right, what is it I need? What's the big picture? What am I? Remind yourself of what your long-term goals are rather than just always in that immediate firefighting kind of mindset. So, yeah, totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah, because it is about longevity, isn't it? You can't maintain that forever, job after job after job. You need to think about your, not only your mental health, but your physical health. If you're sort of 2D gal like me, it's like you need to rest those arms.
I think also, myself and my co-founder, at the beginning of this, we decided that we would take time out, that we would give ourselves at least one day a week, preferably a weekend, and have holidays. Because we came to the conclusion that if we burn ourselves out, we're the ground of the studio, then that's going to affect our business, you know, so we need to take care of ourselves. It's important, you know, if we do burn out, then what? So really, it's a false economy, isn't it? If you keep grinding yourself into the ground and eventually something's going to give.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good place to end, maybe, on making sure that everyone takes care of themselves and don't burn out and, yeah, be soft on yourselves. But does anyone have any sort of closing remarks or anything that they'd like to say to our audience as we leave this salary report of 2023?
Good luck out there. But we're all in it together, though. That's my main point. Let's be friends. Let's just keep talking.
Echoing last year, actually, where we said, you know, everyone is a person. You can have a conversation with that person. They can say no or they can say yes, but don't be afraid to talk to people about things. You don't even have to do it face to face. Like, speak to Dani, get her templates. Just everybody is a person and talking will make you feel better about it.
And I do think that's inclusive of both your producers and the rest of the crew working on project to start being transparent, well, more transparent, even in, like, private spaces, just to sort of, yeah, give yourself the opportunity to earn more, hopefully. Or at least, like Alina was saying earlier, feel the fairness that everyone else is getting the same on the job, because, yeah, it might be more stressful assuming everyone's being paid more when actually they might not. So, yeah.
And to also have the information about what's really happening around you, so you don't get the fear, you don't turn inwards, you know, you don't start going in these nightmare scenarios in your own mind. So, yeah, that's an important thing, I think.
Yeah, 100%. I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you for doing it.
Thank you, Hannah.
Okay, yeah. It's been lovely to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
Lovely to meet you. Yeah, thanks, Hannah.
Yeah.
A huge thank you to Danny Abram, Melissa Bell-Gill, Alina Bappel, Catherine Pitt and Emma Windsor for talking with us today. It was great to be able to discuss the report and hear from all these different perspectives. We really hope you found it interesting, as we think being open about rates is so important to our industry. We look forward to carrying on the discussion online, either in the comments of our Instagram page or on our Slack channels. Please do let us know if this report has been helpful. We'd love to get your feedback. Now from everyone at SheDoThat, thank you for listening.